This is truth be told.
That not only are there reptilians here,
new evidence of UFO fleets.
We were close to nuclear war.
To help you transform so that you can live your highest truth.
We're not being told just because we're not ready for it.
Geostations of frequency, vibrational.
I was a homicide detective with LAPD.
UFOs increase. Visitations. We just finished celebrating the winter solstice, and we're just a day away from Christmas. There are several Christmas songs that I grew up with, and I'm sure all of us grew up with, talking about Yule, making Yuletide gay. Well, today we're going to find out the difference between Yule and Christmas, and the connection between the Christian holiday to celebrate the birth of Jesus versus the winter solstice that observe in some pagan traditions. Well, today we're going to have author Jason Mankey on the show talking about his book, The Little Book of Yule. He is a third degree Gardnerian high priest and helps run two witchcraft covens in San Francisco Bay. And he's going to answer some of these questions today on Truth Be Told. I'm Tony Sweet with Truth Be Told. Please welcome to the Truth Be Told studios, High Priest Jason Mankey. Hello, hello.
Hello, Tony. Nice to be with you today.
I'm so glad you're here, and thank you for taking the time out on the 23rd of December to celebrate the holidays. And, you know, there's a lot of holidays going on, from Christmas and solstice and Hanukkah and everything else. So I love that we're touching on what we're touching on today, because a lot of people don't know about the Yule and other practices out there that people celebrate. So can you jump right in a little bit and just tell us what kind of what your take is on Yule and how it even connects to what we are celebrating, mass celebration of Christmas?
I have like a big view of all of this. I mean, for me, this is the Yuletide season. It embraces every holiday. The term Yule itself really means three different things. Yule has been used as a synonym for Christmas for the last 1,000 years. When people were pagans and practicing what was a traditional Yule, they got Christianized and they kept the name for their new holiday. And then Yule was originally a Germanic holiday. Mm-hmm. It was a Germanic pagan holiday. We don't know a lot about it. We don't even really know exactly when it was celebrated. It was a winter holiday. It might have been 2 months long, celebrated from the middle of November through the middle of January. It might have been a little bit shorter. Most likely the solstice played an important role in it. Hmm. But we know a couple of ways about how it was celebrated. The first way was it was celebrated with lots of drinking and lots of food. And this is a hallmark of many December celebrations.
Right.
Pig was especially important, but you know, you had your crops, they had just been brought in. They'd had enough time to turn into alcohol. So you had plenty of booze. There was fewer Viking, there was nothing to raid. If you were a farmer, there was nothing to farm. So there was a lot of time. So you would drink a lot, and then you would culled your herd. So there was plenty of fresh meat. And, you know, the world is a giant refrigerator.
Right.
This time of year, so it doesn't go bad. So you could really feast on the meat. And it was a time for ghost stories, too.
Ooh.
We don't really associate that with the holiday so much anymore, but people would sit in their long halls and drink mead and eat pigs, and they would tell stories. And there was probably some sort of weird connection to the dead at Yule. If you think about December, you can think of it two ways. You can think of brightly colored lights everywhere and lots of energy and hustle and bustle. Or then you can go walking at 11 o'clock at night.
Right.
It's dark, there's no traffic, and it's quiet, and it's so dark outside, and you can hear things from 2 miles away through the cold night air. And it's terrifying in some respects. So I think there was this celebration that was a part of Yule, and then there was also this little bit of scaredness, especially if you'd had a bad harvest. There was a lot to fear with the cold and the dark. So that was Yule, and some of the traditions of that Yule exist today. Like we talk about Yule logs. They had Yule logs at the original Germanic Yules, a big log they drug in and set on fire. It was the centerpiece of what they were doing for any given day. And then there were characters that they had during that celebration that have probably lasted until the present. In Scandinavian countries, there's a Yule goat. And goats, yeah. you know, doesn't come down the chimney. That would be a little difficult for any goat. But sometimes the Yule goat would drag a cart. It was originally probably dragging Thor's cart, and then it would drag Santa's cart later. People would hide Yule goats. They would decorate with Yule goats, et cetera, et cetera. Today, Yule is usually used as a synonym for the winter solstice, and it's celebrated by a lot of pagans and witches and even a lot of atheists as an alternative to Christmas. Winter solstice celebrations are thousands of years old. I think archaeologists think that they might have been celebrated now for about 10,000 years, making them our oldest religious celebrations. The oldest solar observatory is 7,000 years old and is oriented towards the winter solstice. So people love the winter solstice, and it's just something that's resonated over the millennia.
Did the goats end up turning into the reindeer? Is that how it happened? Because it seems like I'm looking at some pictures that look like they were carrying like gifts or food, and I was wondering if that end up turning into reindeer later.
You know, it doesn't seem to be that way. There's a pretty clear like literary history you can follow with Santa,
right?
And the first time we see reindeer are 1821. Before that, he usually Saint Nicholas would usually ride a horse, but in some of the Scandinavian areas, the gift giver was a goat, a Yule goat. Sometimes it was terrifyingly frightening, like a human goat, and then other times it was just like a goat with presents, you know, a little bit more benign.
Well, you know, I was looking and it says that, yeah, it was talking about how it's a Norse not myth, but a Norse legend about the Yule. And I know we've done a show a couple of years ago about how Christmas evolved, and a lot of it did come from pagan. You know, pretty much the Christ child itself was pretty much the only thing that really fits the Christianity of Christmas. Everything else, Christmas tree, stockings, you know, pretty much were added as the years moved on, but a lot of the stuff came from paganism. For the people out there that really don't know what pagan is, you know, because we've know what it is. We've talked about it many times, but for the people out there that really don't know what it is, what is a paganism or pagan?
You know, there's probably thousands of different kinds of paganism, but when people usually use the word, they're talking about religions that existed before Christianity, mm-hmm. usually with a plethora of gods. You know, the Norse gods, if you worship those, that's a pagan religion. Greek gods, pagan religion. Sometimes pagan can mean anyone who's not a Christian, though that's not used so much in scholarly circles anymore.
Right.
When we think of pagans, we just sort of think of pre-Christian polytheists, mostly probably in Europe and
right.
the Middle East and Northern Africa.
So, okay, I want to go back to the book. I mean, I love Llewellyn's a great company. I'm glad you work with them because they definitely put out some great content and great books for people to learn from. But it says in your book, filled with dozens of magical tips, recipes, and crafts. Where did you find these, you know, recipes or crafts? I mean, was it something that's just been passed down through the generations, or did you really have to dig to find the information to put in this book?
There was a lot of days of just heavy drinking and making things up. You know, it's a combination. It's a combination of things. There's a couple of recipes in the book that are millennia old. There's a recipe for Saturnalia wine. Saturnalia is an old Roman celebration which had a huge impact on Christmas.
Right.
And because, you know, there's some records there, you can make your own Saturnalia wine. Some of the magical activities are things that I just do at my own house mm-hmm. that I put into book form. But usually I like to be inspired by holidays past,
right.
whether it's like a Victorian Christmas or going back to the Roman Saturnalia, which is a big favorite of mine, and looking for inspiration there. You know, I'm also not a very crafty person, so sometimes when you contract for a book, you know, you're supposed to do it in a certain way. And
right.
this is a part of a series, and it's supposed to have little artsy things in it. And I tried really hard, and I would practice them and work on them at home to make sure they were actually doable. You know, it's kind of a challenge. It's the history that I really like the most.
Yeah, I'm a big history buff myself. I love to learn about where traditions come from. And like you said, it's fascinating to, when you know the real truth about it, you know, you can walk away pretty surprised of what you can learn. And I want to know some of these magical tips. Where does it tie into, because, you know, we talk about Santa Claus when it comes to Christmas, and he was pretty much created and filled with magic.
Right.
Was this one of those pagan added to the story, and then Yule kind of came along with it, or how did that happen with magic and Yule?
I think if we look at the holidays, there's only one holiday where we really talk about magic as being integral to the holiday. You know, no one ever says it's a 4th of July miracle,
right?
It's like Christmas is the magical holiday, whether it's, you know, somebody coming home that's unexpected, or if you watch the Hallmark Hall of, you know, Hall of Fame movies or whatever, it's about love that shouldn't exist, you know, blossoming during the holidays. And then, of course, figures like Santa Claus. I mean, that's magical, being able to go around the world and give presents to billions of children, all without a real job. I mean, it's fascinating. It's all magic. And, you know, it just sort of permeates the season in a way that it doesn't any other part of our calendar year. And as a witch, we do magic. You know, magic makes our life better. But, you know, sometimes magic can be for big things like spells. You know, like, you know, we're trying to help a friend get over a sickness or whatever. And sometimes a spell can just be something fun, like I'm trying to feel better. I'm trying to feel more excited about this particular holiday season. And the book is full of like those kind of pieces of magic where you kind of bring that energy of Yuletide into your home.
And I was looking also, is mistletoe, is that also part of the Yule? Did it come from the Yule side?
You know, mistletoe is a really open question. Like a lot of these things, we're not really sure exactly where they came from.
Right.
Mistletoe shows up pretty late in the historical record. It probably comes from an English custom known as a kissing bush. And the kissing bush had mistletoe in it, but it had lots of other things in it. And they would set it up, and if you were under it, you had to kiss. And eventually the rest of the bush was kind of whittled away. And all of a sudden you're just left with mistletoe. Mistletoe was allegedly sacred to the Druids, according to Roman historians. And the Germanic people also kind of revered mistletoe in its own way. There was just something magical and different about it, probably because it's still green in December. Almost everything that we decorate with at Yuletide is something that is still green in December, where everything else is dead
or
sleeping. So, you know, like, you're always going to find mistletoe, you're always going to find evergreens, you're always going to find holly and ivy, just because they don't ever really go out of season.
And one thing that I find fascinating, that because of the Yule, the 12 days of Christmas.
We've really gotten away from the 12 days of Christmas.
Yeah, and because that, when I was growing up, that was a big, you know, thing. I mean, they still have it, but can you tell the connection between Yule and why was the 12 significant?
In Christianity, the 12 days of Christmas are connected to the period between Christmas and Epiphany, which is January 6th.
Mm-hmm.
So you have this holy season. Jesus is born, and then the Magi arrive in the manger on the 6th. And so you would celebrate those days, you know, and it's probably maybe a leftover from Yule, because those Yule celebrations were so very long. Mm-hmm. And the Roman celebrations, too, were very long. You had the Roman Saturnalia, which lasted from about the 18th to the 23rd of December. And then a week later, you had the January Calends, which was a celebration of the start of the new year. And during that whole period, heavy drinking, heavy feasting, lots and lots of fun. Again, you don't have to do any agricultural work. And when people celebrated the 12 days of Christmas in Europe for a long time, they did exactly those same things. They drank too much. They fornicated too much. They ate a lot of food, and they just had as much fun as they possibly can. And the highlight of the 12 days of Christmas was always Twelfth Night, which was January 5th. January 6th, if you were a Christian, you were going to have to go to church. And then on the 7th, you were going to have to go back to work. So the 5th was the best day. And people just used to get like skunk drunk on January 5th. If you read Shakespeare, there's a play called Twelfth Night. And Twelfth Night was like the peak of the 12 days and the peak of the Christmas season. And now in the United States, especially, oh, it's January 2nd. It's all over. The holidays are done.
Right.
And I would like to extend it more. I want more time for boozing and eating.
And fornicating. No, I was kidding.
And fornicating, yes.
We can't forget that. Also in the book, we talked about the magic, but also the spells. I'm curious really about that because, you know, you're a high priest and in Wicca. And are you considered Wicca, right?
Yeah, I'm Wiccan, yeah.
Yeah. So what are the spells that are in this book that can people safely do on their own?
Yeah, there's not anything that's really too advanced in this book. So the Llewellyn's Little Book series isn't just for witches. It's for anybody who's magical.
Okay.
So the magic and the spells in the book are really approachable. And they're just, as I said, they're just about bringing in sort of the energy of the season. It's not about bewitching your neighbor who doesn't put up holiday lights.
Right.
You know? So it's all pretty nice.
It's kind of like the Kronks, you know, that, if you ever seen that movie, they didn't put the lights up and celebrate Christmas, and everybody in the neighborhood pretty much were after them to.
I mean, there's a lot of really great old pieces of folklore about sweeping out the old and bringing in the new, especially with the new year, and that's a part of this book too. So a lot of the magic is about getting rid of things that no longer serve you and pushing them out the door. I like those kind of spells where you kind of get to start with a fresh slate when you begin the new year.
Well, I mean, since you are a high priest and we could do that any time of the year, but why is it more important at the end of the year? Is the winter solstice, does it have kind of a stronger energy to end the year with? Or how does that work? And if I just want to clear out, in, like you said, July 4th, bad energy?
I think, you know, there's a lot of energy in the sun and the moon. Mm-hmm. So right now, when the winter solstice happens, it's the shortest day, longest night. So it's a good time to try to get rid of things because of that lack of daylight. And then as soon as that's over, it can be a good time to maybe try to increase things in your life. Mm-hmm. Like if you're looking to increase money or goodness, taking advantage of that growing sun in the sky. So there's magic there, but there's also just sort of the magic of everybody around you. And you can take advantage of that. You know, one of the things about the new year on January 1st, it's something that's on everybody's mind. People do, you know, I've got my New Year's resolution. If you go to the gym is extra busy for about 2 or 3 weeks before everyone gives up, right? So I think that's energy too. So if you're looking to get rid of something or to start a new leaf, you sort of tap into that energy that everyone else is projecting outside for January 1st and for the start of the year. And witches are good with magic, good with energy, and we take advantage of what's in front of us. And what's in front of us is everybody making resolutions and trying to do things and trying to better themselves and get rid of bad habits or whatever else it is.
Is there we're only a week away from the new year. Is there something that people can do at home that definitely you have tons of books that people can go purchase, I'm sure. But is there something that people can do at home to help make that transition into the new year a little smoother and maybe a little cleaner?
I like to sort of cleanse my house with salt water or with smoke. My wife's allergic to almost everything. So like burning things like incense or sage or something is a little more problematic. So I usually whip up some salted water. Salted water is really good for getting rid of negative energy. I like to sprinkle it throughout the house. And then when I'm done, I like to go and then I sweep the entire house. And you know, sweeping is useful too because I'm getting rid of dust and probably the hairs of all of my shedding cats. But perhaps most importantly, though, I'm making a conscious effort to sweep out any negative energy. And I'm also like looking at places where I think negative energy might really thrive, like in corners of the house. You know, negative energy, really hard to define, but every once in a while, somebody can walk into a room and you can just feel them walk into a room when they're mad. Right. And it's,
oh, yeah,
and you just sense it and you know that it's there. And throughout the year, we all come home with negative energy. We have a bad day at work. We don't just set that aside when we drive home and walk in. It comes in with us and it stays in the house and it builds. the salted water kind of eats through some of that negative energy, and then sweeping it up and then outside in a way is a good way to rid my house of that negative energy. And it just feels like January 1st or 2nd really is a great time to do that. I'm just cognizant of starting over and thinking about, you know, trying maybe to have a better year than the year before. So, yeah, those are easy things to do. And I think that's a great way to start the new year.
And do you think a lot of times, because a lot of people, they always say that, you know, we can heal ourselves in many ways. And in fact, when my mother, right before she passed away, she said, I'm ready to go. Like, she was ready to make the transition. And shortly after that, she was gone. And I feel like, you know, as humans in spirit and our soul, that once we make a decision to let something go, such as our spirit, we can also do the opposite of cleansing ourselves and healing ourselves and making a better day, a better year, just by mindset. Do a lot of these rituals, is it more of a mindset? Because if you go into it, to me, if you go into a ritual going, this ain't going to work.
It's not going to work.
Probably not. Yeah, I was going to say, it's probably not going to work.
Yeah.
So do you think a lot of spells and rituals like this is really just more of our natural ability of inner magic and our inner healing?
I think a lot of it comes from inside of ourselves. I mean, I think that we have energy within inside of ourselves, and we do magic. We try to direct and push that energy. But also, belief makes a huge difference. Yeah. If you don't believe in what you're doing, it's not going to work.
Right.
So, yeah, I think belief's really integral. And a lot of magic really just starts with us. You know, we have to do work on the inside and the outside for magic to work.
How far, because you write, like I said, you write a lot of books on witchcraft, and I'm fascinated with witchcraft. How far can witchcraft go? Meaning, you know, we see the old, you know, movies and, you know, TV series that have witches, and, you know, they can blink of an eye and disappear and, you know, change destinies and all this stuff. But how far in reality, how far can we take witchcraft?
That's a really good question, because I've had some really great experiences with magic that sort of defy explanation to me. I worked at a grocery store when I was younger, and there was a gentleman who came in there, just kind of an icky person that you just didn't want to be bothered by. You didn't want him to talk to you.
Right.
And he showed like an especial interest in me, which was really unsettling. I did a spell. I wanted to make myself invisible to him. Now, I didn't think that I was going to suddenly become invisible while I was working, but the idea was he wouldn't see me. He wouldn't bother me. And after that spell, I could walk by this person. He just didn't talk to me ever again, you know, right by it, nothing, you know, so that was great. I wouldn't call it like invisibility in the way a superhero is invisible, but it worked the same way. I got exactly what I wanted out of the spell. I don't think that magic can cure cancer, but when I had a friend who had cancer, our coven did magic for him, and the next day he like sent me a message. He's like, did you all do something for me last night? Because I could feel something and I could like see energy coming down around my hospital bed.
Wow.
And I said, yes, we did, you know, and that brought tears to my eyes. You know, it didn't cure his cancer, but we think that we gave him energy to keep fighting his battle, and he's been cancer-free for several years now.
Oh, that's great. And that's what I believe. It's, you know, we can definitely heal ourselves. And just by people telling that, you know, we're sending you positive energy can make a difference.
Absolutely. For sure.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And go ahead. I'm sorry.
Oh, I had great luck with job spells. My first book that I got contracted to write, I'd done a big spell, and then 2 weeks later, I got an email from a publisher saying, will you write a book? I mean, that's easy. I didn't even have to submit anything.
Wow, that's great.
So there's been some great moments.
I have to say, I'm sure people out there listening have probably done this too. Like, you can be like 200 people in a grocery store or in a parking lot or something, and you're like, okay, that person, you know, they're kind of acting up, and like, okay, that person, I know he's going to come up to me. I know it. I know he's coming up to me. Here he comes. I mean, you can just feel like, okay, apparently I'm attracting this person. Because I remember for years no matter where I went, if I was at a bus stop, or people would just open up to me like I was their therapist. And I'm like, what is it that makes people, and then now I'm, of course, I'm interviewing people doing it for a living, but it's just funny how, you know, we, our mind will put that out to the universe, and he'll go, okay, here you go. Yep, that person's going to come up.
That's why I say, like, I'm invisible. I'm invisible. You can't see me.
Sherry in the chat room says, magic with pure intent can change water. So, and then also, this is kind of off subject, but I'm going to ask it anyway. And for anybody in the chat room, if you have a question for Jason, please put it in the chat room. And if it's kind of pertaining to what we're talking about, I'd love to pass that on to you, Jason. He just says, why did we come here on Earth? And I'm like, okay, well, let's see if Jason can at least throw a wrench into that one there.
You know, I have no idea why we're here. I'm happy that I'm here. I think that hopefully we're here to learn and to grow. A lot of witches believe in reincarnation, and I am one of those witches who believes in reincarnation.
Yeah.
And I think that over several lifetimes, we get the opportunity to be better human beings. You know, some people take that opportunity and seize it, and I assume other souls have really screwed that up over the centuries. But yeah, that's a really great question. You know, I believe in deities. I believe, you know, in a world of many higher powers, but exactly why they all decided that we needed to be here is something I really can't explain. Again, I'm happy though.
I'm sure if we could explain it, we probably wouldn't be here in the first place.
Yeah, maybe when you can answer the question, then you ascend or something. Right.
It's like, oh, he knows it. Don't spread it. So bring him back.
Yeah.
Well, I know that a lot of people have a belief, like you said, we talked about before the show about, you know, a religion, you know, Buddhism, Christianity, Hinduism, and then you have Wicca, where a lot of religions have a lot of similarities. And even, you know, like Wicca has a lot of similarities, because in Catholic Church, there's a lot of ceremonies. There's a lot of prayer is almost like a spell or a wish. So how do you think religion and like the traditional religion, as going to church and coming together as a coven, and witchcraft, and how did it get so separate and become so negative into so many people's mind when it comes to Wicca and witchcraft?
Well, I think witchcraft magic offers an opportunity to gain control over your life to a degree, and also people in positions of power don't like it when people below them have power, you know, and it's a power that they can't control. You can see this even going back to ancient Rome and Roman emperors. They just liked magic because it was something that they just had no authority over. Mm. Like somebody could do a spell to get a Roman emperor killed, right? So they're like, right. Don't do magic. And then the church is the same way. Like, don't do magic. We want everything to be through us, right. through our God. We don't really want you to have any power and control over this. So magic has always been a little bit of suspect because people in power can't control it, and they don't like that. They love being in control, and magic is something that the rest of us can use to assert a degree of control.
How does one, as a leader, like a high priest, that, you know, people do in some ways follow you? You know, they look to you to lead them into their learning of Wicca. And a lot of people in this industry, psychics, you know, become celebrities, which is in some ways have the power as almost like a Catholic priest, or, you know, how do they keep the ego out of the religion or out of the teachings of Wicca?
That's a really great question, because when I see the ego start to rise, that's usually when people fall.
Right.
some of it's probably jealousy, because people who want to be at that high perch see an opportunity to take somebody down. But I truly believe being a Wiccan that I am taught to be humble to others, that as a priestess or a priest or a priestex or whatever, you know, you want to call yourself as, like, kind of an officiant,
right,
that you are there to serve others. You're not there to serve yourself. You're there to provide an experience for those that you're practicing with,
right,
help them touch higher powers and to feel magical energy. And I mean, my wife and I both, you know, are, like, really focused on that. That's important to us. We don't ever want it to become about egos. I'm really lucky in that my wife is, you know, keeps me very humble, because I may write books, but I know who's in charge in our household, and it's not me.
I always say it's always good to have somebody that says your shit stinks.
Yeah, absolutely. And I'll also say another thing, too, about witches as a whole. I think it's a lot of people who are, I don't want to say they're like alphas or whatever, but they're independent thinkers.
Right.
Right? Because you don't just, you know, come into this path because you were pushed to it. Usually you search for it or you're drawn to it in some way. And I think because of that, people are, like, a lot more self-reliant. They're a little more skeptical of leaders, and I think that's a good thing to be. And, you know, they're trying to figure things out for themselves while taking advantage of people who have been doing it for a bit longer than they have.
Yeah, yeah. And, in fact, Sherry in the chat room says, I've been listening to Jason for years. He's very interesting and a great author. So
thank you.
You have somebody that... Yeah, and I admire anybody that can put pen to paper and put a book together. I've always wanted to sit down, but like I said, my ADD is so bad, it's hard for me to do that. But maybe one day as I get older, maybe my mind will slow down. But I do have a question. What's your favorite aspect of this this upcoming holiday?
Wow. I love everything about the holidays. I think what I love the most is just sort of the warmth, the energy mm-hmm. that you see from people. You know, like, people tend to just sort of be in a better mood for the week before this and the week after. You know, you go out and you see your friends and everybody's like, oh, happy holidays. They want to hug. And sometimes you get presents or whatever else.
Right.
It just feels like, to everybody I know, regardless of their religious affiliation, there's something special about this time of year,
right,
and they want to share that feeling with those around them, you know. And then, of course, I just love certain traditions, like Krampus is certainly a big favorite.
Yeah.
You know,
I love the new Santa Claus on Disney. I had to watch it just because I love all kinds of Christmas stuff, but I love the Krampus character that they portray, kind of like this cranky old thing. But I love the Krampus. I did a couple shows on it. One thing that I think a lot of people have questions about is, like, we talked about a little bit about how, you know, this time of year, there's miracles and, you know, people are, well, unless you're shopping, most people are kinder to each other.
Right.
And like you said, January 2nd, it's time to get back to normal. And, you know, I'm depressed. My life sucks and I hate my family and everybody gets on my nerves. And then till December or I guess Thanksgiving, then we kind of start hopefully feeling a little bit better, or maybe sometimes more depressed. Why do you think that we can't keep that magic? Why do you feel like, I mean, if we can hold it for at least a month, why can't we hold that for another 11 months during the year?
You know, I think that we have varying degrees of magic throughout the year, like other little moments. I don't think we don't have a season as extended and as celebrated as the Yuletide season.
Right.
But, I mean, there's something in the air in October because of Halloween.
Right.
I think. I do think that, like, Easter, no matter what your religion is, I think that there's sort of this expectation of spring and an excitement the air because of spring, you know, and the idea that things are going to be green again and there's going to be grass. But I think as a society as a whole, we just decided at one point, you know, we're going to smack everybody in the face with this Yuletide stuff beginning in the middle of November every year. And you just can't escape it. Like, you can escape some of this other stuff. You know, like, everywhere you go, there's Christmas music playing.
Yeah.
You go to Target, you go to Walmart, whatever. You know, there's decorations everywhere. I mean, and this is the only time of year we really do that, where a you know, a majority of businesses decorate for the season, yeah, and they change the music that they're playing. You know, it's like a whole shift in consciousness. It happens a little bit in other spots, but not to the degree that it happens in December. I often wish, though, that we had moved Christmas to like February 2nd, because January is depressing, too.
Right,
dark,
right,
cold, right?
Right,
you
right.
Know? Yeah.
We could have it in Easter and then Easter and like during the summer or something like that. But actually, even like if you like you're talking about the music itself, I think it also a lot of music, Christmas music from now and even Christmas music from 1940s and 50s, people still know it. People still sing it. No matter age or, you know, mostly age and race, that they still sing it. You'll be in a Target and you're singing it and you'll look across the room and somebody else is singing it at the same time. And you don't hear that too often that you can enjoy a song at the same time.
No, there was like a weird quote I read a few years ago. They said that America only listens to jazz once a year, and that's at Christmas because of the Peanuts special. And I thought about that, and it's sort of true because you can't escape that. But we're not nostalgic as a culture very often to the extent that we are at the holidays.
Yeah.
You know, where people are still listening to Bing Crosby. Even Mariah Carey's All I Want for Christmas Is You is almost 30 years old, and it's the number one song on the pop charts right now. You know,
every year.
Yeah, this time of year, for whatever, like, invites nostalgia. It invites looking backwards. And no matter how old you are or, you know, what you've been exposed to, most people still know the same song sung by people from the 50s, 60s, 40s, 30s, whatever it is. You know, just like our grandparents did.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's a really unique time of year because this doesn't happen. Right. Any other time of year, right?
Yeah. Oh, exactly. Yeah. And I have a couple more questions in the chat room, and they were great. These are pretty good, and I'm actually curious myself. It says, as a Wiccan, are you dedicated to a ritual for each holiday?
I do. I mean, at least 8 seasonal Sabbats a year.
Mm-hmm.
The Sabbats are sort of the Wiccan high holy days. They're the equinoxes and solstices, and that's why we celebrate Yule, the winter solstice. And then there are the cross-quarter days, like Samhain, Halloween, mm-hmm. Imbolc, February 2nd, Beltane, May 1st, and Lammas or Lunasa, August 1st or 2nd. So we try to celebrate the change of the seasons. Oftentimes, a lot of these holidays have kind of parallels in the overculture,
right,
whether it's Yule and Christmas or Easter and Ostara, the celebration of the spring equinox. You know, so you can kind of incorporate a lot of that stuff into what you do, too. And then I like any holiday, you know, at our house, you know, we celebrate 4th of July. We celebrate Juneteenth now that it's a national holiday. I mean, we celebrate as much as we can. In America, we don't have enough holidays as it is. So any excuse for a holiday is great.
I totally agree. And this one I find interesting because I remember we were talking about Patty Negri before the show, and she brought this up about the ancestors, and they wanted to ask, do you include your ancestors in your celebrations?
I include people that I think of as my beloved dead, those that I was close to in this life before they passed, mm-hmm. and then the mighty dead, those who kind of paved the way in magical spaces.
Yeah.
There are a lot of witches who are really focused on their ancestors.
Yeah.
And, you know, the ancestors from hundreds, if not thousands of years ago. I am not really one of those. I think it's because of a belief in reincarnation
I
could be my own ancestor. Yeah. I don't know.
Yeah, it's like that was me. That was me. I'm celebrating.
Yeah. Yeah. But I mean, I think it's important to honor, you know, those you were close to and where you came from.
As
I said, there are a lot of witches who do that much more than I do.
Yeah, I totally believe that. I unfortunately I don't celebrate as much as I should. You know, I'm just one of those, I look to the past, but I don't try to live in the past. So I try to live in present and look to the future. So I do celebrate my, you know, like my mother, you know, for her birthday, I go and the ashes we placed out here in California and I go lay flowers but I talk to my mother still every day. So
I hear my grandmother's voice in my head every day. It's like not a day goes by when I don't think of my grandparents. And, you know, they're friends I lost from school and stuff. I mean, they stay with you.
Yeah, for sure.
A phrase that a lot of witches like to say is what is remembered lives.
Mm.
And I take that to heart.
Yeah.
It's also kind of the theme of the Disney movie Coco in a way, too. So, you know,
yeah.
Think of those who have passed. You know, keep them close in your thoughts. And
that
your
was
heart.
Such. I think that was such a great movie for children to see.
I love that movie so much.
Yeah, I mean, it was good for adults, too, as in entertainment. Yeah. But I just thought that was they touched on our ancestors so well and to honor them. So, well, like I said, you are such a great writer and you have so many books that people can see. How do people go and check out your books? Is it Amazon or do you have a website?
You know, I don't really care how people buy books. As an author, you get your dollar in royalties,
right.
You know, no matter what way. You know, sometimes being in the Amazon algorithm is useful. I really think it's important to shop locally if you can.
Yeah.
If you practice witchcraft, going to a local witch or new age store keeps those stores around. And I think that they're really great for interactions with people. So that's where I would usually tell people to go if they can. But, you know, most of us aren't picky.
Well, I'm hoping, and I'm going to say that I need help from our listeners today and people that are listening until later, that March 31st through April 1st, we are going to have the Parapod Festival. It's a film festival, podcast awards, and conference. We're going to be honoring Linda Moulton Howe, the Lifetime Achievement Award. We have Robert Schock, Patty Negri. We have Char Margolis, Glennis McCants. We're hoping Jason will come down from up north and maybe be on a panel or two. And we would love to have you all join us. And we're also going to be going to Vasquez Rocks on Friday night and having a spirit circle and having a stargazing. So Ben Hansen, the TV host, is going to be there. So we hope that you guys can help me and all of us spread the word to have a great attendance. And Jason, hopefully you can submit and be a part of the getting nominated for your podcast. And tell us a little bit about your podcast. What's it about?
Well, I'm doing a podcast right now with Patty Negri live every Wednesday evening. It's called The Witches Movie Coven. And there are several of us who are we all gather together and we talk about our favorite, usually witch movies, but sometimes other movies. We did the Krampus a couple of weeks ago.
Nice.
And this week we just did our favorite holiday films. But yeah, that's on all of Patty's outlets. And she's sort of like the main host, but the rest of us do get to talk. And that's always fun. And then I do a sporadic podcast called the Witch with Books podcast, which is all about witch books, usually with a rotating cast of guest hosts.
I love it. I love it.
Yeah.
And one more time, can you give us something that we can do to make the holidays even better through, you know, a ritual or candles? Or I know Patty uses a lot of dragons and bringing in the new year with a bang, with good positive energy.
Wow. You're putting me on the spot. Now I got to think for
anytime.
A second. Might have to stall while I think.
Yeah, I can sing a little ditty if you need a little more time.
there's an old tradition, and it started probably with people in Israel, but it could predate that even, called chalking the door, which is a really fun way to begin the new year. And chalking the door is taking the things that you want to bring into your life and using chalk and then writing those over the threshold of the door.
Oh,
and it
cool.
looks like an equation when you do chalking the door. So, you know, like H for health, health plus. And in Christian times, they made a cross instead of a plus. But for me, it just looks like a plus.
Right.
You know, health plus love plus safety. And then often, like, we'll invoke the gods of the house that we have. For us, that's the Greek gods Dionysus and Aphrodite.
Right.
My wife and I truly much agree on, and then we'll add their blessings. And so we're chalking the door and adding these letters and saying what it is that we want in our home for this year and saying who we want to share our home with amongst higher powers. So I'm a big fan of chalking the door. If you Google chalking the door, you'll see lots of exercises for it. It's not an obscure thing. It used to be a lot more common, It's one of those things I want to bring back. And even if you're hungover on New Year's Day, it's still pretty easy to do. You don't have to do a lot of work.
Well, I have to say it's almost like a an early vision board.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. You know, you're just putting up what you want, you know, on your house. And then you'll see it every day for at least a couple of weeks until the chalk goes away.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Well, thank you, Jason, so much for being here and talking about the Yule and witchcraft and Wicca and all kinds of different things that we got to go over. And if people don't remember what he just said, just rewind and you can write it down and hopefully bring this new year into existence with the positive energy. So, but thank you so much. And you can follow Jason at on the IG at the_silicone_valley_witch. And hopefully we'll see you real soon, Jason.
Tony, this has been really fun. Thanks for having me and happy holidays.
Happy holidays. And thank you everybody for tuning in. And please, again, if you don't mind spreading the word about the theparapodfestival.com, we'd love to have you join us in celebration and give back to our community. I want to celebrate all paranormal. I don't want to focus just on one genre. I think we're all here for the same reason. It's just, you know, different characters in the pot. So I hope you guys will come join us. But please tune in on Mondays for Minutemen Report with Robert Hensley. And then Wednesdays at 3:00, we have Bonnie Burkert with the Truth Be Told Transformation. And we have coming soon our first Truth Be Told Spanish version with Metaphor. He's going to be starting in January. So for our Latino followers out there, we have somebody just for you. And again, meet every Friday right here on Truth Be Told. So until then, see you later. Take care. This has been another episode of Truth Be Told. Thank you so much for watching. Recorded live at UBN Go Studios in Burbank, California. Join us on social media, Facebook, Truth Be Told Radio, Instagram, Truth Be Told Paranormal. Go to Truth Be Told Worldwide for more information on upcoming shows. This has been another